it was just all these really neat events that you wouldn't get in your normal life. And I think that's often why many of us do any race. It's an experience that takes us out of our normal existence.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I'm Chip.
And I'm Chris. And this is episode 138 of the show. On this week's show, we welcome endurance legend Gordo Byrne. Gordo is a coach, stud endurance athlete, and happens to be the only American ever to win Atala, the Swim Run World Championship. He won the event in 2010 with partner and fellow endurance legend Jonas Kolting. We go into all the details of their epic day on the archipelago. But first,
training update. So we just finished our last big week of training with some monster major pool swims, four-hour swim runs, and lots of trail running. Atala is now just 11 days away as of this episode's release. We're feeling pretty good about everything, and we're about as ready as we're going to be.
Yeah, I don't see getting more ready.
Yeah, I don't think so. Now
I can't get more ready.
Rustle those passports up, make sure we got all of our nutrition and fuel and everything, and start packing, I guess, is all that's left for us to do. Now on to this week's shout-outs.
Yeah, so this week we're shouting out all the teams racing the One Water race. We're going to talk about this race a little bit later in the show, but rest assured that everyone who lined up at the start is more than worthy of a shout-out.
Oh, yes. Even just signing up for that thing.
Yeah.
Even just throwing your name in the hat for that one.
Hardcore swim run.
Absolutely. Now for this week's Feats of Endurance. So this week's Feats of Endurance winner is Aaron Morrison, who posted a surprisingly non-chilly swim run practice from Juneau, Alaska over the weekend. Thanks for proving that there's a place to swim and a place to go running nearby. Swim running is going to happen.
Yeah.
There was also Ironman, Alaska, in that same area. Maybe he was hanging out a little bit past time. We know some swim runners that did that race.
That's right.
But if you want to hop into the Low Tide Boys Strava Club, just head on over to Strava. Search Low Tide Boys and join swim runners from around the world as they train for all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Stuff, swim run, triathlons, hikes, One Water races, who knows? It's all there.
I don't think you can upload a file that long.
Strava would freak out if they saw One Water race come through.
Someone would flag it.
Flag as spam or something.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to kick it over to Chris over on the news desk for this week in swim run.
All right, we've got a big update for everyone this week, including some actual news. We're actually doing some reporting, so stay tuned for that. In Norway, the epic Rockman swim run took place over the weekend. This race looked as amazing as ever, with some incredible photos you can check out on their Facebook page. We asked race director Thor Hesselberg to share his race director report with us, so enjoy this latest installment of Race Director Reports with Thor, God of Thunder. Take it away.
Hey, it's great being back. Yeah, we did have a Rockman swim run this weekend. Great success, a lot of good experiences. Tough day out for all of the participants. We had also this year the first time we did a solo event. Started early in the morning, 6:30, jumping off the ferry, heading up the trail over to the Great Lakes, and then after some tough new trail running on the hidden path, they ended up at the pulpit, where this year they actually met Rockman. He actually showed himself, which has not really happened in all the previous episodes. Eventually, you know, it's the start of a long day. We had this year 58 teams participating on the long course. We had 10 solo athletes in addition to 16 teams doing the short course this year. Everybody had a fabulous day. Sunshine was out all day. We had quite good water temperatures, probably the warmest we've had so far in the race's history. This because the 14 days leading into the event has been quite favorable, even at the mountain plateau. However, we had rain leading into the race the days before, So we lucked out. Only rainfall on the day happened at the finishing line. I mean, at the prize ceremony, where the Nordic gods actually tossed us the double rainbow, making it quite magical end to a great day. The fastest team, Team Envol, did the course in 8 hours and 29 minutes. Puts it in quite a perspective what type of course we are looking at. It's a marathon long distance, 6.5K swimming, and the remaining proper trail running goes going up and going down towards the fjord multiple times. The views and the fjord really showed it from its great perspective, giving us a lot of new legends, as we call them at Rockman. And the reason for this is when you swim in the Lysefjord, the DNAs from the gods get infused in your body and elevate you from being an ordinary human to a first path on becoming a god. This has to do with this is so-called the gods' playground, where they fight and their sweat, blood, and tear get infused into the creeks and eventually leads into the Lysefjord. The race itself was great success this year, I would say. That said, I got a lot of good feedback on the finishing line. I think I've never been called more interesting names or characters or whatever you want to call it. Everything leading from greatest thing I've ever seen, experienced, to calling me sick bastard, probably because putting them through that course. Also a crazy F word I was, and some people even said they hate low me. I do take that as a compliment of actually allowing people to try out something which is so remotely from what you can expect. Going on to Rockman, you will need to be properly trained running trails, because this is proper trails. It's not like walk paths. It's boulders. As an example, we have Seaside Sprint, 2.5K distance, and the averaging time here is probably 10 minutes per kilometer. So it's not a fast race, but it's said to be one of the most beautiful ones. And the fjord is magical. And next year we're hosting it on the 19th of August. And we hope to see both of you there and everyone listening to this great podcast. So looking forward to seeing all of you at the World Championship in a couple of weeks. And I have one goal for that day, and that's to keep the Lovetide boys behind me. So let's see if that follows through or not. All right. Take care, guys.
Well, we will see Thor very shortly, as he alluded to, in just a few weeks at Utsala. And we shall see who finishes first. Team Thor or the Low Tide Boys?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the God of Thunder on that one. But so we mentioned, we also have some exclusive reporting about Rockman. So in next year's race, the 2023 edition, they're going to introduce an experience distance to go along with their Utsala Merit Race distance. Mm-hmm. We're not really sure what form this is going to take. Maybe it's just this 4,000 steps.
I feel like that's a key cornerstone
like
of Rockman.
Just go up with that, do a couple swims, come back down, you're good. So that's exciting. So make that race just a little bit more accessible for folks that want to go to Norway and check that out. In France, the also epic swimrun man Laffery, the race with the wild vertical kilometer to finish the World Series distance race.
Diabolical.
If you needed a refresher on that course, it looked like a perfect day for a super hard swim run. We love this race for a lot of reasons, but especially because the event offers distances for all ability and desire levels. Desire is like, do you want to do a VK at the end of a 30km swim run? They have everything from Utsala Merit Race distance and then all the way down to a kid swim run, which is
nice.
Which is just delightful. In Sweden, there were some local, you know, fun, your grassroots swim run events that took place, including the Gatos Sör swim run and the Email swim run. It's so great to see these local events, and it reminds us that these types of events is exactly how we grow the sport. So make sure you support your local endurance events, specifically swimrun events, by either signing up or volunteering, because that's really what we need to get more people into the sport by promoting these local events and getting more of them out there. Now, by the time this show is released, teams will have finished, or will be close to finishing the inaugural One Water Race. Now, this event is easily the toughest, longest swim run event on the planet, with a total distance of 250 kilometers, 50K of that being just swimming. So we promise, I know, it's like, damn, we promise to have a lot more coverage about the event and teams participating in the next few weeks once we're back from Sweden. In the meantime, make sure to check out our interview with co-founder and race director Thomas Olgender on episode 104 of the podcast.
Yeah, and it's cool. I've seen some team, the USA teams are kind of right up there in the mix, and yeah, some of the front teams, which is really exciting.
Yeah, if you click on One Water, on our hyperlink for One Water Race in the show notes, you can see there's live trackers.
Live tracking
all kinds
on their
of
site.
Stuff.
Really cool. Videos yeah, on their cool. Instagram, so you can kind of follow right along with it.
Totally.
I've been enjoying doing that all day.
Totally. So here in the States, Odyssey Swim Run Mackinac Island is happening this coming Sunday, August 28th. So if you're the type of person that waits until the last minute, well, now's your time to shine and sign up. Make sure you use the code LOWTIDEBOYS to save 15% off your registration. This is the second edition of the race, and we're bummed that we won't be there this year. But next year, I think it's a pretty sure thing, unless there's other things happening, that we will do our best to try to be there. How noncommittal was that? Was that pretty noncommittal?
That was good. We'll be there if we could be there.
Yeah, if we can make it, we'll be there. That's it for this week. Feel free to reach out to us and let us know if there's anything you'd like for us to mention on the show.
Yes, now for Low Tide Boys update. So we have finalized our Low Tide Boys Sweden collab meetup on Saturday, September 3rd at 18:30.
So local time.
Local time. So set your watches to military time or 24-hour time, if you will. Yeah. That's 6:30, I believe.
It is.
You do the math properly.
Good
there.
Good job.
So thank you for everyone who DM'd us with suggestion on locations. We're planning on posting up at the rooftop bar at Talk Bar. So you can go to talk.se to get location info, and we hope to see you there. We'll have stickers and all sorts of other goodies for y'all to meet us up there. Also, I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm willing to do impromptu fikas at nearly any time of the day when we're there. So stay tuned to the DMs or to the Instagram.
Yeah, Chipper's also
I'll just be like, Fika time.
Chipper's also participating in the Fika World Championship.
Fika World Championship. So special bonus shout out to Chet for that recommendation. Thank you, sir.
Definitely.
So let's get into it with Gordo Byrne.
Yeah, so before we get into this interview, we have to give another shout out on the day on the show here to Lars Van Onger, who connected us with Gordo. And it was really cool to go back down memory lane with Gordo about his Atala experience. Even though it was 12 years ago now, his memories of the event are as crisp as ever.
Yeah.
And it was obvious that he had an amazing experience racing with Jonas Kolting. In this chat, we talked about his endurance background, how he found his way to Atala, and how he sees the sport evolve since his race way back in 2010. We loved this conversation. Like, right after we recorded, we're like, that was
yes,
awesome. That was great. So we're really excited to share it with you and kind of see, you know, one of the titans of endurance sports here in the U.S. who's won Ultraman and all kinds of crazy races.
Wow.
And yeah, friends with Jonas. Jonas convinced them to come out, and they had an awesome day out there. So it's really cool to kind of get that whole story.
Yes, I loved it. It was a great, another little shot in the arm. Motivator shot in the arm for us after chatting on just how great of a day we can be looking to expect.
I mean, he was super stoked on Swim Run before we fake trademarked it.
Yeah, he was the OG stoked on Swim Run. Also, Gordo's blog, he's been putting a post out for nearly every week for 20 years.
Amazing.
Head on over to Feel the Byrne, BYRN.blog, if you want to check that out there. And yeah, speaking of feeling the burn, you're going to have a little burning in your ears here with Gordo. Take it away.
More of a tickle.
Yeah, just a little niggle.
All right, we're super stoked to welcome to the show Gordo Byrne. He's a coach, stud endurance athlete, and winner of the 2010 Atala, the Swimmer World Championship, with his partner, Jonas Kolting. By our investigations, which is limited to what we can find on the internet, he's the only American to win this iconic race, which we will be racing at the time of recording, literally 2 weeks from today. Welcome to the show, Gordo.
Good to be here, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. I mean, for folks who may not know of your endurance exploits, why don't you tell us a little bit about your endurance background and sort of how you found your way to Atala?
Yeah, okay. Actually, that's a fun story. So before I did triathlons or even knew how to swim, I was a kind of did a little ultra running's a stretch. I was sort of an ultra hiker. And I did mountaineering, and I was living in Hong Kong. So I was working at an investment job out in Asia, and I do these big trips. So I climbed in France, I did Mont Blanc, and the biggest expedition I ever did was Mount McKinley, Denali in Alaska.
Wow.
Took three weeks off of work. And we actually did it in 2 weeks. So I got back to work a little early. And so I was married for 1 year, and this is when I was younger. And in that year, my wife went to see a fortune teller, Chinese fortune teller out in Hong Kong. The fortune teller told her that her husband was going to die in the mountains.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
And so she comes. Yeah. So she comes home. And he's like, hey, fortune teller told me you're going to die in the mountains. And so I was like, all right, well, I mean, I guess I'm going to stop mountaineering and rock climbing and stuff. And I was, so it left kind of a hole. So I, back then you could just sign up for an Ironman. You didn't have to, they didn't sell out or anything. So I a year out from Ironman Canada, I just signed up for it. And so I bought myself a bike, and I'm coming up on my 30th birthday at the time. So when I turn 30, I go to my first ever Masters swim workout. And this is the middle of winter in Hong Kong. And I just get along with the coach. And it was back then, triathlon wasn't as big as it is now. It's pretty big in Asia now. And so not many people would turn up at the Hong Kong Tri Club workouts. And so the guy, it was like a semi-private three times a week. We would only have two lanes, but you know, like if it was busy, it was long course, there'd be like five people in the lane. That was busy. Mm-hmm. So I had this guy who was one of the best triathletes in town, who was a coach, a solid swimmer. And he just taught me how to swim. And you can imagine I had all the issues of a runner coming to swimming. You know, my legs were going crazy, but they weren't doing anything for me because my ankles were so stiff. You know, my heart rate was going through the roof. I was never relaxed, panting down the lane. Mm-hmm. But he worked with me. And I just kept showing up three times a week, every week. And I got better. And I got through my Ironman, just that first one. It was like, it was, you know, 11 hours or so. And
that's pretty respectable for the first one still, but yeah.
Yeah, I was really stoked. I mean, I got in before it was dark. And so here's another weird thing about that first year. They had this thing called it was the first time they ever did the international lottery to get into Ironman Hawaii. I was one of the first people to ever enter that. And so I enter and they pull my name. I was, you know, just some random guy from Hong Kong. So I turn up at swimming. And I'm like, hey, I just got a slot to Kona. And there's guys that have been killing themselves for years to qualify.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like, it's like Gordo just got a slot. And so I went. So after I did Canada in 11, I went to Hawaii for the first time. And that went well. I was like about a 10:38. And but just a brutal day.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Overswam, rode too hard on the bike, made all the mistakes. Actually,
classic.
There was a point in time where I felt like I was seeing the lava fields in black and white. I was like so bonked. But I loved it. It was the best part of my life was training for triathlon. So I'd be like sitting at my desk just wishing I could do more training. And so that's just what I did. The following year, I talked to my boss. I said, hey, I'd like to take 2 months off. And he's like, okay. And
I like your boss.
Yeah.
He was He was a great guy. I think he might be retired now. He lives in Singapore now. Really nice guy. And he says, yeah, you can take 2 months off. So I take my 2 months. I turn up at Vineman, which is now, I think it's Vineman 70.3.
That's right in our neck of the woods over here in California.
Yeah, Vineman is no more. Now it's Santa Rosa 70.3. And then the original Vineman long course is rest in peace.
Gone. Rip.
Okay, so the original Vineman, and this would be, so this is probably like early July 2000. And I've been training in just brutal Hong Kong heat all spring, training for an Iron, like doing Ironman training. I turn up, it's a temperate day, and it's just so nice. I have this great, great day, and finish second in my age group, get a slot for Hawaii. And I'm in really good experience. And then I roll on from Cali, and I come to Boulder for the first time. Just met, like, I don't know, it was like a classified ad or something. Somebody had a room to rent, and I was up in the mountains above town. And I just packed my car up every morning. I had a cooler, go down to the 50-meter pool at Scott Carpenter, do my master swim, ride my bike, and run from my car. And so all summer long, just trained, had a really good build. And then
you're like, I'm loving triathlon. You know what I need more of is
altitude.
No, like longer triathlon. So at some point, when does the Ultraman World Championship come onto your radar? And for folks who don't know, this is a 320-mile, 2-day event on the Big Island of Hawaii with like a 10K.
3 days.
3 days?
Yeah.
10K open water swim.
Yeah.
261.4-mile bike. I looked these up. Bike ride and double marathon.
Easy double marathon to wrap it up
on road.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. So I go to Canada again. I'm second amateur. I go to Hawaii again. Goes better. About 10 hours in Hawaii. And then when I'm on the pier in Hawaii, there's this little flyer stuck to a lamppost. And the flyer is the ultra. It's those distances you just said. On this little piece of paper, interested in doing Ultraman? And there's a phone number. And I'm just looking at that, and I'm like, how could anybody ever do that? Like, it's just totally beyond my capacity to understand.
Who would call this number? Let me just see. Let me call to see if it's even working. Who would call this number? Who in the right?
I don't know. I don't call. I'm not interested. It's totally nuts. So I go back to Hong Kong. I take a year. This time I'm like, hey, I'd like to take a year off instead of 2 months. So around Halloween, I hit the road, and I had a roommate who was a triathlon coach. Y'all must have heard of IM Talk, Johnny Newsom.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Bevan. So Johnny used to live with me in Hong Kong when he was a pro triathlete. They would bring triathletes into Hong Kong to train with the national team to try and lift their squat, lift their quality. Wow. So I thought that was a pretty good idea. So I gave Johnny a place to live in exchange for doing my sessions with me and coaching me. So I go down to Christchurch. Johnny puts me up in his parents. They got a spare bedroom. I'm living at his parents' place in Christchurch. And he introduces me to a guy called Scott Molina.
Yeah.
And
old
Scott,
school.
Yeah. I mean, the oldest of old school. And like, real traditional training techniques,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So I didn't know, but Scott was totally out of shape when I met him. I'm like some fast age grouper guy, and I don't really know how good he is. I just know he's like, he won a lot of races and stuff, like about 100. And I just start turning up at his garage every morning. We're training together. And then, so we're like buddies. And then eventually he starts coaching me. And then he's mentoring me, and I start racing elite. So this is kind of like 2000, 2001. I'm developing as an elite athlete. I'm getting faster. But I'm, you know, it's like top 10 stuff. And top 10 back 20 years ago is not like top 10 today. I mean, you go top 10 today, you have to like absolutely rip. And and like I see athletes winning races now with times that were the world record when I was racing. So it's the whole sport's totally changed. But so... let's see. Now we're talking about, it's about 2002. Scott's like, hey, because he had won Ultraman. He's like, you know what? I think you'd do really good at this event. And I'm like, but it's a 10K swim. It's going to kill me. And he's like, no, you can handle it. I'll help you kind of get ready for it and stuff. And so he got me into it. And I remember the first time I ever swam 10K in New Zealand. There's a 50-meter pool in Christchurch. And I did it in the morning, and I was so blown, I went home and just went to sleep. And I'm like, there is no way I'm going to be able to ride my bike 90 miles, after I do that. And he's like, don't worry, you're going to adapt, you'd be all right. And then I did it again. I did a training trip up to Kona, where I started at the swim finish of Ultraman. I went 3 miles out and 3 miles back. So I did a 6 mile continuous open water swim, went okay. And so each time I hit the distance, it was better. And so when the race came, I didn't have high expectations, because there's a lot of really experienced athletes that turn up. And I really had no idea what was going to happen when I tried to do this much exercise day after day. But I came out of the water first. And wow. I was like, oh, well, that's great. And then you don't want to give up the lead. So I just hammered the bike. I treat it like a one-day race. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's what I advise people to do when they do Ultraman. Just treat it like a one-day race. Just swim and ride that thing like that's the only ride you got to do. And I got a good gap that day. And then the second day, same thing. I got a bit of a gap on the major climb. And then the last day, Molina reaches out to me and he's like, look, the only way you lose this thing is if some guy tries to race you and you blow yourself up and end up walking. Because once you start walking in a double marathon, it's
a tough
you're given
pit I mean, to come out of.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, not going to get lured. And so I just trotted, just kind of, just jogged the whole thing. I think I was like 8 minute miles for the first marathon. And then after probably, I'm probably at about 35, 40 miles, it got really tough. And my crew started lying to me about my splits, because they wanted to keep me. I find out afterwards they're having this conversation, like, he told us to tell him, of his splits. And my brother was the crew chief. He's like, we're not telling him his splits. we're just going with it. And I ended up winning the thing, and it was great. Completely changed my view of myself as an athlete, and really opened up this ability to do these ultra events. And it also opened up my mind to really challenging myself with my training in terms of doing more volume and some really challenging blocks of training, which ultimately developed me as an Ironman athlete. And so when all this is going on, Scott meets Colting in Brazil. Colting's down there doing Ironman, and Colting is super charismatic. Just an amazing guy. He is like a Nordic god came to Earth, and it's cold.
We described it the same way.
Yeah, was he wearing aviators and was super tan back then too?
He like had the body butter possible, and he's like completely shredded.
Yeah,
and he's got some Euro hairstyle going, and the whole thing. He's great. So he stayed at my place in New Zealand and introduced me to another friend of mine, Klaus, that came. And so these Swedish guys would come down in the winter trying to escape the harsh Northern European winter. And they'd come down to New Zealand, hang out with us and train. So Colting knew me pretty well. When he met me, I was still developing. I mean, he was crushing me. But, over the years, I kind of got closer and closer, and got the ability to train with him. And then before he invited me onto the team at Otilo, I had had a great block of training. And he came over one spring to the U.S. We were doing a camp in Tucson. He was like our headliner. We were bringing him in because he's mm-hmm. he's a lot more entertaining mm-hmm. than the rest of us. And so the athletes love hanging out with him. And he's like, hey, if you ever want to do it, I'm your guy. You know, like, I know the course. We can win the thing. And I'd love to have you. And I'm like, all right. You know, and so I sign on. And that's how I got into it. But I had no idea what to expect. This was the first, like, the first swim run I ever did with anybody. Mm-hmm. And I trained for the events pretty separately. So I was in great swim bike run shape, and I was in great swim shape and great run shape, but I hadn't done any events to prepare. And it was, our strategy was pretty simple. Colting is such a great swimmer. My job was just to stay with him mm-hmm. on the swims.
Hang on the feet, yeah.
Yeah, and then we would just, I mean, we were moving well on the runs, but as a triathlete, it was sort of easy, steady pace. I mean, it wasn't a tempo run. The day is so long that you have to be quite conservative with the overall pacing, particularly early. And but our swims, we were moving it out, so we just swam off the front of the thing, and we didn't have any pull buoys or anything. Colting wouldn't let me carry anything. He's like, we're keeping this super simple. Basically all I got was paddles, and he gave me paddles that were smaller than my normal size because mm-hmm. like, we don't want to blow out your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And back then we didn't have the keel pull buoys or anything. We just had wetsuits that we had cut ourselves, and we would peel them only for the longest run. The rest of the time we didn't take them off, and the rest of the time you're just kind of either too hot or too cold. You're trying to regulate your temperature a bit with your swim cap.
Yeah.
And we just kept it really simple, and we got lost on the longest run. You know, this is like a half marathon. So we got lost on that because we were way out in front, and somebody back. So I hear now there's like a trail. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Back then, it was still new, so there wasn't enough traffic that they had to have flagging tape everywhere to show you where to go. Well, the locals weren't exactly thrilled with their island getting swarmed by swim runners every so often. So somebody had gone out and cleaned all the flagging tape.
Oh, saboteur.
Sabotage is what Colton said exactly. Colton's like, we've been sabotaged. So we're on the longest run. We're totally lost. They gave us something. It's like beeping, but there's no screen. You can't navigate off it. So, I mean, they know where we are, but we're totally lost. And so there's like this Swedish mail carrier with one of these like bikes out of the 1940s that's filled up with mail. We see him. Colting runs up to him, and he's just telling him the tale of woe and like everything. I'm like, dude, just ask him where the road is. Like, we got to get back on track. And so we get back on track. We roll up. And there's the Swedish Special Forces guys. They were in mm-hmm. second place. We're now like 2K down to them. More tail of wolf from Colting. It was a very emotional experience for him. I'm like, dude, let's just catch up. And so we got a hammer. And so by the end of that run, we're neck and neck. And it was great. And then we battle back and forth those last few segments. Yeah. And we come out of the last swim, and we're right there. We're all together. So that our team, their team, we're going. There's a little rise when you come up out of the water. Colting's hamstrings go, and he's like locked up. Oh, no. And I'm like, dude. So I put my hand in the small of the back, and I just push as hard as I can. So it's like this max effort, just push him to the top of the hill. And then he starts to feel better, and he drops me. And so he takes off. And then I'm like, wait, dude, wait. And then we kept, and then we gap them. We're just enough. And then once they saw that we had gapped them, they ease off because the four of us were way out in front. And so we win. They were second. Everybody's slapping hands and backs and stuff afterwards. And it was just a great day. And it was a lot of fun.
So, wow. And you finished in just 9 hours and 9 minutes.
Nine, yeah. Nine, so nine. I think back
Red Bull
then,
Ironman, Team Red Bull Ironman.
I think
how many
then,
Red Bulls did you have that day?
Oh, dude, I can't handle a Red Bull because it made me throw up. I my tummy doesn't tolerate it. We were on these. It's a Swedish brand. It might be like Martin or something. It was they have a Swedish nutrition brand. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing for people to think about. One of the nice things as an Ironman is you get a pretty good gut. So what I did at the aid stations, I would walk into the aid station, drop my heart rate, and then just absolutely pound those thin liquid gels with sports drink or water, depending on how I was feeling. And that was it. I would just load up big time at the aid stations and not be carrying a whole bunch of stuff. We carried a couple emergency gels on us just in case one of us bonked. So we had about like 300 calories in like really the thin gels, not the thick ones. So the ones that you don't need a lot of water for. And then you would be so kind of bloated feeling when you were coming out of the aid station from loading up, you would have to like power walk and kind of really just get back into the running gently. And I think that worked really well for us in terms of being able to keep the average pace up across the whole day. But you got to train it. You got to train the ability to throw down a ton of fluid just all in one go and then jog or run with all that fluid in your stomach. And coming from an ultra running background, that's pretty specific to ultra running. Same deal in Ironman, but in Ironman you do most of your eating on the bike and it's really stable, so you don't have that jostling that you get when you're running. But so we both had good guts, and so that's how we dealt with our nutrition for the day.
Love it. And before we went on, you said swim run's your favorite thing ever. Well,
yeah.
You said you're in good company here with us. But when did that click for you? Was it after that first swim on the island or crossing the finish line, Attila? When did it
be my favorite?
When did the magic happen for you?
So because I'd never done anything, when I roll into Stockholm, the first thing Colting does is he makes me put all my gear on. We're in downtown Stockholm and there's a park with a pond or something or a river or something. And he's got me running around downtown with my swim run gear on, going in and out of the water to practice the transitions because he wants to see if I can handle the transitions and everything. So I was like, this is pretty cool. We're getting some weird looks like running around downtown. And so that was kind of neat. And then the whole experience with taking the ferry to the start. But the venue where they can do the races, that venue that they have in Sweden is just absolutely amazing. I mean, there's that second long swim where you look out and it's like ocean. And for us, it was a little bit of a gray day, but it wasn't brutal in terms of the winds and stuff. But you get this real wilderness kind of wild experience in some of these places. And the nature of the day too. I mean, being with my friend, being with Colting, winning the thing, but winning it when we thought we had actually won it, and then we lost it and we won it again. Yeah. The whole experience was really a lot of fun. And then because it's a ton of running, but because it's all broken up into pieces, you're not crippled for the week afterwards compared to how much exercise you just did. So I like the fact that the segments break it up and you can kind of just be out all day. Everybody doesn't have to go out and do a 9-hour one. They got shorter ones. I'm gearing up to Colting now has a race weekend in Sweden where they do
Borås.
Yeah. They do the shorter. They do a shorter one for the kids and all my kids swim. So I want to get out to that, the shorter event, which I think is about an hour and a half with my son. And if everything goes well, what I would really like to do is build up the distances gradually as my son grows up. He's 11 now. He's got great stamina. And then ultimately, it'd be really cool if we could figure out a way, the two of us, to get through Otilo one more time together. Kind of as a family.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be super awesome.
Dragging his old man around?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and the other thing I like about swim run is I get to use paddles. I love paddles. So, I probably would have won more races if you could do paddles in a triathlon.
Yeah.
they're really enjoyable. type. It's a good type of swimming because it's a strength swimming as opposed to like a heart rate swim. You know, it's just long, low cadence, big pulls. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely mask if you have any sort of deficiencies. I'm speaking for myself in your technique.
Yes. Yeah. And the equipment's so much better now, too. I mean, you don't have to. Yeah. You know, you just put that monster, you put that monster pull buoy on, and I could probably run pretty big paddles with the flotation that they use. And then the wetsuits are better. And you got this sort of pouch stuff you can fill the stuff in. It's really come a long way. And so I think it would be... Yeah, I just think it'd be a fun thing to do.
Now, you know, 2010 was a long time ago. Have you been kind of keeping up with the sport? I know you're friends with Jonas, so you've kind of been following his exploits. He's started every single one at this point.
Yeah.
How have you seen the sport kind of change just from your vantage point, you know, from over the last, I guess, 12 years?
Well, this year I've been working with Johan. Johan Reuler, not a regular guy, but he's regular in terms of swim run. So he's not trying to win it. Three-time Swedish Olympian for speed skating. And Johan coached a guy called Niels, who won a couple gold medals in Beijing and broke the world record. And I was reading Niels's manifesto about breaking those world records. And I was like, you know what? This makes a lot of sense. And so I reached out to Johan, and Johan had been following. So he knew about my swimming and my performance at Otilo. And he'd been reading my blog for, I think it's 15, 20 years. And so we connected. And so he's been advising me with coming back with my own training. And I've been advising him with his swim run training, because obviously swim run's quite a bit different than speed skating. Although speed skaters, particularly the long course ones, 5K and 10K event, do a lot of endurance.
Mm-hmm. Big engine on those guys, probably.
Huge engine, ton of cycling, and very, very good cyclists. So stamina plus power plus capacity to sprint. So we're sort of speaking the same language. So I've been working with him in getting him ready for Otilo this year. So getting back into thinking about what are the key components to performing at that race. But different than thinking about trying to win the race. So it's more, he's somewhere between front of pack and mid pack. So it's more about, all right, you got a given amount of fitness, and how are you going to enjoy the day and get through it as best you can and prepare for that. So I've been working with him there. It's a different approach. You know, like Colting and I kind of had a strategy. Our strategy when we did it was very much kind of a suboptimal strategy. So it was sort of like if you're trying to win the race, it really helps if you can get out of sight. And yeah. Out of sight, out of mind, everybody else starts racing for second. That was our strategy back then. Mm. I don't know if you could do that now. I think the quality and the depth of the field wouldn't let you get away as easily. It wasn't all that easy. The two of us were in great shape, and we went really hard for an hour. Like basically like as quick as we could go. Mm-hmm. He was hitting the swims. It was everything I could do just to stay on his feet. And if it gapped out, I really had to get back in there on him. And so we did. I wouldn't recommend that start for somebody that wasn't trying to win the thing, because you know you pay a price when you're burning matches as fast as you can for the first hour. And so just working with Johan, one of the things we want to figure out is, well, what's too hard for the first 4 hours of the day? And so we do some long workouts where we'll do a benchmark run, say a 10K after 3-4 hours of exercise at a steady pace. And just to figure out where the ceilings are. So no matter how you're feeling in the first 3 hours, particularly, you know, you got to stay under this ceiling because it's going to get hard later. And that's a principle I used to use successfully with athletes in Ironman. It's very difficult particularly when we're under stress, for our brain to project 6 hours into the future with how we're going to feel. And so it's easy to overdo it. And so one of the ways is, well, you take the thinking out of it. You just put a heart rate strap on and you say, look, if my heart rate's over 135, that's not appropriate. I know I got to chill out, even if it feels easy, because the feeling gets all messed up on race day. And on these ultra events, the penalty, I mean, you start walking on that half marathon late in the day, you're going to be, you can give up. I mean, you can give, I mean, if you're demoralized, you can be giving up 15 minutes a mile. I saw it at Ultraman. Yeah. When I won, there was a guy that was 2 miles up the road from me. And I pulled that back in 2 miles of my running when he had a bad patch. And so the gaps just all of a sudden just whoop, they're just gone. And you, with ultra running, you see that when somebody cracks, they can crack really bad. And you, all of a sudden you're giving away 15 minutes a mile just because you lost the, you're just out of it. You're done.
Yeah.
It also helped that your crew was lying to you about how fast you're running. So in your head, your perception, like, oh man, I'm crushing. I'm still in good pace right here. Let me just reel this guy in. No problem.
Yeah. Now it's self-deception. Not your crew.
There's a magic when you're leading Ultraman, there is a magic point where you realize that you can walk it in and win. And I hit that with about 5K to go, and it was such a relief. I was like, okay, because it's on total time. So even though somebody else won the marathon that day, it was like, I got it. I got the event. I just jog it in, and it's going to be over. So we didn't have that on Otilo, but it was a good feeling on Ultraman.
So you're mentioning that you're sort of coaching up Johan. Any sort of insider tips that you're sharing with him and now are also willing to share with us?
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, it's kind of too late for anybody listening, because by the time they hear this, they better be resting up. So, but maybe for next year. So you need to look at yourself as an athlete, also as your team as an athlete, and you need to consider, how long are we going to be out there in terms of what type of event is Otilo for us, for our team? Is it an 8-hour event? Is it a 10-hour event? Is it a 12-hour event? Is it longer? So because the nature, the duration of the event compared to your stamina as an athlete is going to dictate the nature of your training. And what I mean is, if you're looking at a 11-hour finish, and the longest day you've done in the last year is a 4-hour day, that is a very big race for you. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're a Kona qualifier and you're depending on your age and your gender, you know, you're a sub-9 to sub-10 type athlete, and you're a particularly good swim run athlete, you might be looking at a 10-hour event, and you know that you're currently able to go pretty hard for 9 or 10 hours in a race, and you've proven it to yourself. Different athlete. Likewise, how long is your longest swim? I was an ultra athlete. I knew I could do, well, I mean, I did, I've done, the longest swim I ever did was 15K long course. And I knew that, and I had done a number of 10K swims by the time I was looking at stepping up to doing the Otilo event. So the swim legs, even the long ones, were not long for me. They were shorter than my typical main set that I would do in training. So I knew that with the rest, I would be able to swim those quite strongly. And so you need to look at the components of the race, the total duration of the race, to figure out how you're going to be training. The other thing is, you need to think a bit about, okay, well, what might go wrong? You know, like what could blow it up for me? Now, that's why we were using smaller paddles. One of the only things that could blow it up for Coulting and me is, I think every swimmer has experienced when a switch goes and all of a sudden you can't turn your arms over. I get it. You know, I used to get it just randomly sometimes in Masters. You blow through 5K. And all of a sudden your splits, they just shift all of a sudden. You've just kind of lost it, and you're going 15 seconds, 100 slower. So to avoid that, we sized down our paddles. We didn't want to run the risk of that. It wasn't worth it to us to have more pull and run the risk of that happening. The other thing, gut shutdown. You bonk, or what happens more often is you spike your heart rate to the point where your digestion shuts down. So you create such a large demand for your muscles, you don't get enough blood flow in your stomach, and then you're going to end up vomiting, you're not processing calories. And that's why we were using the walk into the aid station, load up on the aid station, walk out. And we used run walk as well. So I put the aid station walks, but I didn't want to spike my heart rate. And so I would take it easy on the little short uphills and stuff, not go charging out of the water and spike my heart rate every time. And again, that's damage limitation. We had simple transitions, so our transitions were quick, and we would instead use the time not to spike our heart rate coming out of the water. And that worked really well for us. So the other thing, what can go wrong for people? You come to that second long swim and there's whitecaps and rollers chugging through, and it's going to be a really bumpy swim. And you haven't done any of that. You haven't done any overload training on your body. So you need to do some overload in your swim training. And my favorite overload is medley swimming. Fly, back, breast. Because the fly is very specific to the sensation you have when you're swimming in chop. And you kind of get pulled up, and your heart rate and your lactate's coming up, and then you're having to process that while you're moving, backstroke and breaststroke, and then you switch to the free, and you get some freestyle recovery. So I'll give you an example of a set that I would do a lot. So it's 100 medley. I do the short course meters, 100 medley, and then 150 free, continuous. And so it's 250. And you would just roll the 250s continuous without stopping. And it doesn't matter how fast you're going or how you swim it. It is just a really nice endurance set. And I would do that. I would do anywhere from a 2K set of that up to 5,000 worth of that, just to build that. It's sort of like strength endurance. And the whole time your heart rate's kind of going up and down. And if you're feeling good, you can kind of play games with how you're going different speeds within your 150 freestyle, because you know you're going to have to do a flip turn into the fly. So when you're first learning how to do it, you kind of have to go pretty easy on the freestyle, because otherwise you're going to go into the fly with your heart rate up, which can make the fly really hard. But as you feel your fitness coming up, you'll get to the point where you can actually just roll that set pretty strong the whole way through, and that's a sign that your overall stamina, your kind of muscular endurance, whatever you want to call it, is really good in an open water sense. Yeah. And then I also like doing band only swimming. When I was getting ready for Otilo, I also did towel drags. So pool boy, band, and a towel out the back. And I would do open water towel drags. With paddles and without paddles. And it's different than band only swimming, because it's like a big gear. I wasn't strong enough to drag buckets like you see some of the collegiate athletes doing, but the towel gives you a similar effect. It's a really long pull with high torque. And it's a very different type of sensation. And I did a lot of strength training. So a lot of medley, a lot of paddles, towel drags, didn't swim a whole bunch with shoes on. I just focused on other ways to get me that kind of drag effect into my training.
Yeah, I think the sensation you're referring to with the towel drag is drowning.
That was me. You definitely, it'd be a good one to use your keel pull boy for if you got like that big.
Two of them.
Well, we used to, so before they had those, yeah, people would glue two pull boys together to get that effect. I just had one regular kind of pull boy and paddles, and back then I was pretty strong, so I could keep enough power generation going to kind of move. It was great training. Long open water swims, even though the legs in the event are not super long, I did you know, my longest open water swim right before Otilo was probably about 5 miles. I did a few 5 mile swims, and I think those help. You know, they give you that long stamina, and you get your body used to, you know, just swimming a long way, because the event is a pretty big day.
Yeah, it's a pretty big day. I mean, Gordo, one thing that I'm just really struck by is, like, you know, this event happened 12 years ago. You know, Chipper was like in high school or something back then.
True.
But your recollection of it is, and it's sort of your enthusiasm in talking about it. I mean, it's as if it happened yesterday. I mean, what is it about this experience? I mean, obviously you did it with a good friend, which always helps. I mean, I'm looking forward to doing it with my good friend Chipper here. Like, what was it about that experience that just keeps it so memorable and so sort of vivid in your memory?
You know, that's racing, you know, a memory is a chemical signature. And when you have, you know, it certainly wasn't like euphoria all day, but there were like these moments looking out and moments running or diving into a bay that happens to be filled with jellyfish, when I got a jellyfish allergy, and that was pretty freaky for me. But Colting didn't wait. So I kind of just had to power through the jellyfish, and I didn't get stung. So it was okay.
Yeah, apparently they're not the kind that sting.
It's the Hawaiian ones that mess me up. It was just all these really neat events that you wouldn't get in your normal life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's often why many of us do any race. It's an experience that takes us out of our normal existence. So
I love that.
Love it.
Now, one last thing before we let you go here. We definitely appreciate your time here, but you've had some long days. You've told us about a lot of those. I loved hearing all those stories. Do you have any, like, mantras, or what's your sort of tricks for when inevitably you're down in the pits, down in despair, you're having a bad time? What do you do to kind of pull yourself up out of that and keep chugging on?
Stay in the game is a mantra. Not in the water. Stay in the game. Be the brand. Be the brand. I think if anybody is a coach or a parent or a leader, or be the brand. So that was a huge motivator for me when I was kind of head coach of my team. I'm going through this to set an example. I want to show how we're going to deal with being uncomfortable, being in duress. I want to be the brand. Now, sometimes you're so blown, you don't get there. You can't even get there. So then I do things like count. So 1, 2, 3 is a great, it's my mantra when I'm swimming. Long distance swimming is all 1, 2, 3. I use 3-stroke breathing. I breathe on both sides, and it's just 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So, I mean, I can swim 6 miles going 1, 2, 3 the whole time. And it just drops me in, and it's the feel of the water. It's the way the water feels against my neck. The water is nice and cold in Sweden, so it's that cold water. You know, when I say that, I can actually even feel the water of the race kind of again, like some of those feelings, that coolness. Now, on the run, if you're having a really tough time, I've gone through Ironmans, and I've had great Ironmans where I'm down to counting 10 steps at a time. So just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Do it again. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I also, if I'm struggling, I get to power walk every aid station, take some aid on. So then you're going aid station to aid station, counting to 10 in between the aid stations. And eventually it gets better. And if you just persist, sooner or later, you get so close to the finish line, you might as well keep running, because if you walk, you're just going to be suffering for longer. So let's just get the thing done. So
yeah,
it's that mindset. At the end, when it's early, you need the humility. Don't be in a rush to get to the difficult bits. So the difficulty of the event is going to come to us. We don't need to hurry to the difficulty. We let the difficulty come to us, and be patient with that. And that's something you get from just a lot of really long days, a lot of days where you go 7 hours or more, and you know you're going to be out there all day, and that's just the way it is. There's no emotional, like, there's no freak out. It's like, as an elite Ironman, you're going long most every week, at least one day really long. And you just know that's just the way it is. And so you don't have any of the kind of panic of, oh my God, I'm getting so tired. You don't have that. You're just kind of relaxed and you're just working through whatever's coming up. It's like, we get lost. Okay, we got to work through that. You know, my goggles blow out. My cap comes off. It's like, are they going to DQ me because I don't have a cap? No, they just gave me another cap. So you're just dealing with all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine calls it kind of like his no in life. If you're going for a drive around town, it's not going to be all green lights all the time. So you got to go into the race expecting you're going to have some adverse stuff turn up. You're just going to have to deal with it and just work your way through.
I love it.
Great.
Well, it's been a huge thrill to chat with you, Gordo. I mean, you're the co-author of one of my favorite books from back in the day, Going Long. Really appreciate you sharing your memories, wonderful memories of Ultraman and Atala. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to chat with us today. Really appreciate you.
Don't forget to check out Gordo's blog, Feel the Burn, BYRN.blog.
Long, super long running blog. I was checking it out, researching for this. I was like, man, you've been doing this forever. It's impressive.
Yeah, impressive. I think I've been writing an article a week since about 2000.
Amazing.
Wow. A lot of knowledge in there to someone to rustle up. Yeah. Well, again, really appreciate the insights, Gordo, and thanking for your time. And hopefully we'll see you and your son out in Stockholm at some point in the future.
That would really make my day. That'd be great.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, man. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review, since that's the best way to help other people discover the show and the sport of swim run.
Sign up for a newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at the Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any suggestions for the show or questions for us, send us a DM or an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Riding Easy Records for our show music and, of course, our wives for their support and tolerance of all our swim run activities, podcast, and other stuff.
Yeah, other stuff.
Other
way
stuff.
To, way to keep it PG. Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
Go for a run.
Then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then another run.
And then just keep going. So you're done.
Or maybe can't stop this stuff.